Pod Tackler, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 497, Always On Co-op, recorded live on July 28th, 2015. Hello everyone, welcome to Pod Tackler, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are getting very, very close to RTX, which means our anniversary reunion party as well. I would like to say, though, that officially today, as we're recording this, Podtacular has turned 10 years old as we're recording this. So that's kind of strange, actually, Yay! That we're recording on the 10th anniversary for Podtacular. So I just want to give a moment to let that sink in for everybody that we finally hit 10 years of being a Halo community and Halo podcast. It's been filled with ups and downs, hard times, good times, bad times, easy times, all the kinds of times that you can think of. And we're appreciative of everyone who's been with us at any part of the journey. And that's one of the reasons why we are having our little anniversary reunion party at RTX. It just happens to be the convention that coincides closest with our anniversary, and it's a good time for, and it's kind of a good centralized location being in the middle of the country, so we're actually going to get a few of the, what I call, legacy Podtacular staff members, some of the older members like Fumo Jive and Spellcheck and Captain Crunk up in RTX. I think maybe Dial Pex, I'm not sure if he's coming or not. I know JVB is not going to be able to come, neither is Chucky J. And a few others, but we have quite a bit in store for RTX, which we'll get to in a little bit. We have our panel, we have our party. We're going to be talking about the Josh Holmes campaign article that got put out last week, kind of following on what we were talking about last week with the whole split screen stuff. If you've read the article already, then you kind of got a little glance into why they decided to forego doing the split screen stuff, but we'll go over a little bit again from that article. And we also have a few submissions and a voicemail clip that we haven't touched in a very long time, so we're going to be going over those for tonight as well. So it might be a little bit shorter of a podcast. Beowulf and Haas are not here with us tonight, but we should see the return of Haas for next podcast, which will be on Thursday. We're recording this one on Tuesday, and we should see Beowulf. Actually, we probably won't see Beowulf until RTX, until the Thursday before. We'll be recording episode 499 the Thursday prior, so we'll have everyone in the same room, and then we'll have, of course, our 500th episode be our anniversary panel at RTX. So everything is kind of falling into place with the party. There's still a few things I'm trying to wrap up, but I did order all of the swag this week. So if you did happen to contribute to our Indiegogo campaign, then all of that stuff has been ordered and is in production and on the way and will be received before we head out for RTX next week. There is quite a bit of stuff that you got to do for the party, so I'm still trying to wrap up that stuff and hopefully get that done tonight. And of course, I'm finishing up the plans for what we're going to be doing for the panel. So I guess let's go ahead and jump into some of the panel stuff. We have a 90-minute slot. We actually managed to get that, so thank you to the folks over at Rooster Teeth for giving us that slot. Really appreciate it. We're going to be filling that with kind of some reminiscing time for what we've been through in Halo as we've gone through. So we're going to talk to Fumo Jive about his time in Halo, and also Spellcheck is going to be up there as well, the original co-host. We couldn't get JVB to come down, so unfortunately he's not going to be there. Maybe we can do something where he can call in to the panel. That might be something that we'll look into. But as far as what we're going to be having on the panel is going to be myself, Beowulf, Fumo Jive, and Spellcheck. So the current host and guest are co-host, and then the original host and co-host up on stage. We're going to be doing a little bit of a trivia game, so that'll take about 15 to 20 minutes. Still trying to finalize what the trivia structure is going to be. Don't know if it's going to be Jeopardy-like or some kind of back and forth thing, but We're still trying to work that out, and that's going to be a mix of Halo trivia and Podtacular specific trivia. So that should be a lot of fun, and that's going to give some of the people that are going to be there, if you're planning on being there in the audience, to join up on either one of those teams that we'll have and be able to get some cool Halo swag for answering some trivia questions. We're going to be doing a walk down memory lane type of thing, like I mentioned earlier, that we'll be talking about our past experience with Halo. And I know Fumo Jive and Spellcheck will have a lot to say about the Rec clans and the Pro clans and the All-Star clan. And then we have a bit of Podtacular history that we'll cover as well. And just kind of be an open discussion. And then, of course, we'll probably open it up to questions for the last 15, 20 minutes of the panel. But it's just going to be a time for us to reminisce on where we've been for the past 10 years, how Halo has grown since we've started back in 2005 and Halo 2, and where we are now and where we think Halo is going in the future. A lot of cool stuff for the party is being planned. So this is the first time you hear it. And at the day after we're recording this, which is actually Tuesday, July 28th, we're going to be posting all the details on where you can hit up our anniversary party. Availability is limited. We have only a limited number of people that can be at the venue at once, because they're actually having some construction done on some of the space that they have at the restaurant. But it's going to be the Moonshine Bar and Grill, which is a 3-minute walk from the north side of the convention center. So the doors where most of the people are going to be coming in and out of the convention center, you just go to the east, walk down the street that is adjacent to the convention center, and right near the end is going to be Moonshine Bar and Grill, and it's right there. It's going to be pretty easy to get to. All the fun will start at 7:30 and go on to about 10. There's going to be hors d'oeuvres, or it's going to be drink tickets, so it'll be drinks for two drinks for every person that's there. It is going to be, I think it's family friendly. I have to double check if they're going to let family in there, because they are serving alcohol. So I'll have to double check on that, but I think that is allowed. There is going to be an outdoor place and an indoor place. And unfortunately, with not fulfilling the fundraiser, we're not planning on doing anything particularly special other than just having the event. Although if people are coming and want to, maybe if they have a games case and want to bring their Xbox, then we can set up a LAN. They do have internet, which we have asked if we could use, and they're okay with that. Unless people bring stuff to where we can do some kind of LAN, we don't have anything planned. It's just going to be more of a gathering and just kind of going for having a good time, being able to talk with people. You'll be able to talk to some of the old-time Podtacular people like Fumo, Spellcheck, and Captain Crunk, and a few other people that are going to be there. I know a lot of the Griffball Hub people are planning to be there. Drunken Halo is going to be there. And there's a few other Halo communities that are going to be there as well. I think Duquesne will be there. So if you're a big fan of his, then you'll get to talk to him as well at the party. And a few other people that have expressed interest in coming. So we definitely hope to see you there. We definitely hope that you can come celebrate with us as we've been going on the air, or on the series of tubes, for 10 years. It's been quite a ride. And Godzilla's been here for, what, a year of it?
year and a half, two. Yeah. I forget. Somebody kind of asked me that question the other day, and I had to go digging through podcasts to figure out when I was officially part of the program, or part of the community. And I really should have tattooed that on my forehead or something.
Get one of those sticky notes?
Yeah, sticky notes. Why do I have a sticky note on my forehead?
Receptor asked the question, is there going to be karaoke? I can talk to Justin, who is actually going to be bringing the audio equipment. So he's going to be DJing pretty much for the night. So shout outs to him. He's over at Drunken Halo. I can see if he wants to do that. Although I think for the sanity of the guests, we might kind of defer on that until maybe later in the evening. But I guess it's something I can bring out to him, see if he's interested in accommodating that for us. But yeah, I'll ask him, see what he thinks. if there's any questions regarding the party, feel free to go ahead and put them in the chat and I'll answer them. But that's basically what's going down for RTX for us. We have our panel that's at 2:30 on Saturday, and then our parties on that Saturday night starting at 7:30, and we'll be going to about 10 o'clock. So we hope that you can come and join us. I know that there is the Rooster Teeth party on Saturday, and there's likely a few other events going on Saturday too. But if you're able to drop by, we would love to have you come by and just kind of celebrate with us, because it's a big milestone for us. And even though we're not nearly as big as a lot of other Halo communities out there, it's still important for us to at least recognize that we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the people that have come through in the past and may have left to do other things, or people that are here now. And it's you guys that have kept us motivated to keep going. And it's the reason why we keep on doing this podcast, is because we have people like that are here in the live stream right now listening to us. And we have people that download us, whether it be via iTunes or Zune or however else you download our episodes. We wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for the support that we get from you guys. So huge thanks to you. And I hope that for anyone that is able to come out to RTX coming to Austin, that you get to drop by and get to have a little bit on us as a thank you for being part of this community that we've had around for 10 years now. I'm still trying to wrap my head that I've been with this almost 7 years. It's kind of crazy.
Well, I'm really looking forward to meeting all the people that'll be down there.
I think it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, there's a lot of people I've talked to online, and I've never even seen them, so it's going to be interesting.
One of the other reasons why we wanted to do RTX is because RTX started out as a fan, well, not RTX specifically, but Rooster Teeth was a fan company, so to speak. So they did Halo Machinima, and it got a big popularity and growth off of that. So their foundation was in the community, and it's just kind of coincidental that we're putting on a party that's for a Halo community, for Podtacular, and we want to just have a party for our community to come and help celebrate what Halo has meant to us over the past 10 years and what Podtacular has been to the few that have come and dropped through for this past 10 years. It's basically just a big thank you for everyone that has been a part of us. And is, I mean, 10 years, I think that's quite an accomplishment to have a community that's up for that long. So I want to say we're probably, well, I know for sure, we're definitely the longest Halo podcast running around. We're definitely not the longest Halo community. I would say that's HBO. But they've been a part of our history for a long time. And we've been able to meet up with so many other Halo communities over the 10 years that we've been through. We've had the ability to do stuff with Bungie, with Certain Affinity, 343, now that they have the reins of Halo, and a lot of other communities out there too, like Griffball Hub, Drunken Halo, a few of our former clan mates, Outcast Reporn, Praetoria Guard, Tide the Leader, Arm the Flag, a lot of those communities. So it's been an awesome experience to get to do that. And I think I can speak for Fumo, Javin, Spellcheck, and JVB as well, where being able to just have a voice in the industry, have a place where you can have your opinions and have people kind of respect those opinions, is also another, just one of those wild and crazy things where it's like you really have that kind of an impact on people. And that, I think that says something when people choose to listen to a podcast like ours and hang around and interact with us, play games with us, meet us at all these conventions. And every once in a while, we get the keep up the good work tweet, which is always one of those kind of just things that really encourages me on why we keep on doing this. I know I've talked a lot, so I can get off my soapbox now.
Well, there's a lot to talk about. You got 10 years of history, and it's just truly exciting to be able to be part of Podtacular for me and be able to celebrate the 10-year anniversary. You know, I've always kind of shied away from the clan / community groups in Halo because, you know, I've had some bad experiences in the past. There's this one clan I joined, and they were just total jerks. And, you know, it lasted about a month, and I was out. And then I've had a couple others that I've joined that they just kind of quit, you know, just stopped out of nowhere. But ever since I've become part of Podtacular, even from the point when I actually started to, you know, show up to live streams and game nights, I've always enjoyed the community that's been, you know, that is our community, the people that you come in and participate in the Podtacular group. Meeting you and Brent the first time that I actually got to talk with you guys on game night, I was really impressed with you guys. I didn't listen to Podtacular from the beginning. I've mm-hmm. only listened to Podtacular for probably about the last, well, since just before Halo 4 came out is when I found Podtacular. So, but I've just really been impressed with the quality of people that are in the group. And I hope we keep bringing those kind of people into our group.
I hope so too. A little hint at what's coming down the pipeline as well is we're going to be kind of opening up our doors to have some other people help us with some stuff, because Halo 5 is going to be big, and not that we appreciate everyone here, but we would like to have a little more of a depth when it comes to staff, so we can actually do more for the Halo community at large. So there's definitely some plans that we have of stuff that we would like to do. Lots of video ideas, lots of articles that we would like to write. And it's not to particularly go out there and like compete with other Halo communities out there. There's great Halo communities. And I think one of the things that Podtacular is most known for and most respected for is the podcast element. And I think that's where we strive the most. But there's other sites that are a lot better and focused on things specifically. So you have Team Beyond, who's the competitive site. You have Halo Archive, which is the lore site. You have halo.bungie.org, which is probably one of the oldest Halo community sites around. So I would say like those are probably three of the staple communities out there. You have Griffball Hub, which is solely dedicated to Griffball, which is pretty awesome that a game type as specific as that has such a massive following. You have all these Fort-specific communities and all that stuff. So while our main focus is podcasting, there's a lot of other stuff that we would like to do and like to collaborate, and everything that we would like to do and collaborate with, having just four people to do that who have full-time jobs is a little hard. So we're actually looking at expanding our staff at Podtacular. We're going to be doing that shortly after RTX. So what we're primarily going to be looking for writers. So if you can write, then that's going to be something that we'll be looking for. Also, making videos is going to be another thing. And then also, if anyone out there has a knack for web design that wants to help us, that we'll be looking for that as well. We'll be making more of an official announcement on that after RTX. But just to give you guys a little insight into what's going on, since RTX is coming up here pretty soon, that's what's going to be coming down the pipeline. But yeah, I just want to recap again. RTX is going to be happening in a week and a half, which is crazy exciting and also crazy frightening at the same time. Again, our panel is going to be on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. And then our party is going to be at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday that same night. So we hope to see you there. And we're not expecting to fill up the venue, but as far as having a max number of people, if we do get to a certain point that we are maxing out the available capacity and you show up late, then we will have to start like turning people away or say, hey, come back later. We'll let you know if someone's left by then, kind of thing. Because fire code is a thing and we have to observe that.
You know, fire marshals are really picky about that.
Yeah, they are. It still should be a good time, though.
Oh, it's going to be a blast.
We have a pretty delectable lineup of hors d'oeuvres, which is I'm really looking forward to. I'm excited.
Me too.
But we'll have official details on our blog tomorrow, on our homepage tomorrow, if you're listening to us live. If you've heard the podcast, then they're already up there now. So make sure you go check that out. If you're coming to RTX, we hope to see you there. And if not, the I know the panel will be live streamed. So they have RTX Twitch streams for every panel room that they have, or at least that's how they've done it in the past. So once we get that information, we'll obviously shoot it out to everybody, but that will be live streamed and that will be our 500 episode. So that's going to be really cool. For, let's see, moving on to some other stuff, unless anyone has any RTX questions, feel free to put them in the chat. But we're going to go ahead and move on to our next topic, which is the campaign article that Josh Holmes wrote last week. It's called Halo 5 Guardians, Your Team is Your Weapon. So in the article, he talks a lot about the mindset that they went into with the campaign. And traditionally, Halo has been a single player campaign where you're going in as the Master Chief, or with the exception of Halo 3 ODST, where you're playing as the Rookie, and then Halo Reach, where you're playing as Noble Six. All the other times, it's designed to be a single player campaign, but you had the co-op elements in there so that you could play with friends. Josh kind of explains that while the mindset for the other games was good from a single player experience, the co-op experience was just more of a mechanical thing and not actually driven for the campaign. So what they wanted to do for Halo 5 is they wanted to really enforce this feeling of a fire team. So natively, you are running co-op, even though you're playing a single player campaign. You'll be playing either as Master Chief or Locke, being the primary characters, the leaders of each fire team. And then you can have your friends come in and drop in real time into your campaign session. So every campaign game is going to be on dedicated servers. Basically, every game, every kind of game in Halo 5 is going to be on dedicated servers. And we talked a little bit about that issue last week. So make sure you go check that podcast if you want to hear us talk about that. But this whole concept of having your constant co-op squad, I like how that's kind of a justification for having co-op be an integral part of the campaign. And Josh also explains in the article that it makes architecting the campaign a lot more easier because you're only having to account for one scenario. So when you're going through and coding a campaign for multiple people, you have to take into account of, okay, what can one person do versus what can multiple people do at any particular time? And it also is an issue with load zones. So you know the whole issue in Halo 1 where you're yanking people, especially in the tunnels on assault in the control room where you're literally 5 feet from somebody and you get warped in front of them because it's a load zone.
Yeah, I do not miss those at all.
They're so fun to annoy people, though, if you really wanted to go that route.
Inevitably, I would be walking up to a weapon or a health pack and my teammate would hit that load zone.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, stay put.
Yeah.
So I can go back and get that weapon or health pack. And in the later games, it was a lot more, well, a lot less obtrusive than it was in Halo CE. It seems like Halo CE, and it's probably just a sign of the console it was designed for, the limitations as far as how much RAM it had, as far as how big each section or how much of each section the game could load into RAM at one time.
Yeah.
Because in Halo 2 and Halo 3, yeah, you still had those, but they weren't as obnoxious as they were in Halo CE.
Definitely not.
But, you know, the fluid drop in, drop out thing, that's something I'm looking really forward to. And the fact that, having two Master Chiefs or four Master Chiefs playing through the level is neat, sort of. It doesn't really fit the stories because, the campaigns were designed for single player. And when you put two Master Chiefs in there, it's not game breaking or anything, but
it's a different experience.
Yeah. You're supposed to be the last Spartan and you look to your right and your co-op partner, he's a Spartan.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Although Halo 3 had a good implementation of it, because that was co-op,
yeah, that's,
but it made it canonical in a way.
Yeah, that's what I was actually just getting ready to say that. With Halo 3, you had one Master Chief, you had one Arbiter, and then if you had other co-op partners other than that, they just became two elites,
yeah,
which they actually have names.
Yeah, loyal Toa? To the Arbiter.
What's their name?
Laird will probably know. He'll shout it out here in the stream in a second.
Yeah, and that... The Halo 3 campaign, that is the one of the things I really enjoyed about the campaign, is that, yeah, I'm playing co-op with friends, but it makes sense. The characters that you're playing make sense.
Exactly.
They fit into the storyline. They don't detract from it.
But the mechanics of the previous Halo games up until Halo 5, it's still engineered around...
a single player.
Right. And then having to adjust... and account for other multiplayer experiences.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, in the previous games, basically all they did was increase... let's say, I think they increased the health of all the enemy combatants.
So I'm pretty sure they did that for Halo 4.
In Halo 4 and Halo Reach.
They ramped up the difficulty, and that in turn does a little something with health for the AI as well. But I don't think it was until... yeah, I think it was Halo Reach and Halo 4 that did it. I'm not sure about Halo 3. Pretty sure Halo 1 and Halo 2 did not do that.
Halo 2 didn't have to if you were playing on Legendary.
Oh my gosh. Halo 2's Legendary is the worst. I still don't know how I'm going to do that in 3 freaking hours to get that achievement. Going to do it, but I have no idea how I'm going to do that. And we're doing Endure. We're streaming Endure when we're at RTX, by the way. So I don't know if we're going to do this on the Thursday, either after the podcast or before the podcast, or maybe on Friday, depending if we have something or not. But we are going to be doing Endure. And if we can stream it, we are going to stream it. So you will have entertainment at RTX.
This could be really interesting.
I think it will be. I think it'll be very interesting.
I will be bringing my Xbox.
I will be bringing mine as well. And I will... likely be bringing my games case.
Well, I figure you're probably going to put your Xbox in your games case.
If I bring my games case, I will. But most of the time when I bring my Xbox, I put it in my backpack. Because I don't necessarily trust putting it in my checked baggage. That's just me.
I don't blame you.
I'll do it with my Travel 360. I have a 360 that I have downstairs on the big screen and that I use as my Travel 360. So I don't mind if that gets like dented or damaged or whatnot. But if it's my Xbox One or my Halo 4 Xbox, that's my primary Xbox up here in my room, then I usually pack that in my backpack. But if I take my games case, then I'll use my games case and that'll just be my second carry-on.
Yeah, I have an entire suitcase devoted to my Xbox.
Dang.
It's just a little one. It's just a little roll around, and it's literally just big enough to fit, I believe, my Xbox and my monitor and the controllers.
Okay. How big is it? Must not be that big.
No, it's not really that big.
Okay. Carry-on size, probably, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's about that. It's pretty close to the ones you see them rolling around when you see people just walking around the airports. It's about that size. Like I said, it's not huge.
Gotcha. So Laird and Pins came to the rescue. It's Nithro Srom. I'm going to butcher these so bad. And Uzi Thaham were the two elites that you played as in Halo 3 co-op campaign.
Honestly, until recently, I didn't even know they had names.
Really?
I never looked into it. It's something that it's just a question I never asked myself.
Okay. Fair enough.
So, I recently learned something new about the Halo universe.
There you go. There's always lots to learn about the Halo universe. It's just that expansive. It's crazy how much stuff there is out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts. Anyways, back to the article. Josh goes on to talk about some of the AI that they've been working on, and especially the order system. So, this is where you can actually give orders to your AI teammates. So, you obviously can't like control your player teammates. So if there's any AIs left on your fire team, then you can give these orders, and it's stuff like attack a target, go to a certain location, use a turret or a vehicle, pick up a weapon, revive, and they're all contextual. So it's based on where you're looking at the time with your reticle, and then you just hit up on the D-pad. It's going to be interesting to see how well this system works, because stuff like that usually has a couple of bugs, or if there's two things close to each other, then the context clues might not pick up on the right thing. So it'll be interesting to see how well fleshed out the system is.
From what I saw in the campaign demo, it looks like when you look at something, an outline will appear around it, and to help you distinguish what you're actually commanding your AI teammates to do. So it may, don't get me wrong, there's probably going to be some of that where you'll look at something, and just as you hit the up button, you'll bump the stick and it'll pick up the weapon that's laying on the ground.
Yeah.
But it looks like they've really put a lot of thought into this system to make it to where it's a fluid motion. You know, you look at that battle rifle, you just hit it up on the D-pad, and one of your AI partners picks that weapon up. The one thing I had a curiosity about is if I would be able to command a specific AI to pick up that weapon, or is it just going to be the one that's closest to it?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's anything that's going to, I guess that's going to be all based on the contextual system.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good question. I would assume that there's not.
You know, if Linda is standing right next to a plasma caster and I want Fred to pick it up because I don't want Linda to drop her sniper rifle.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You may have to shuffle your teammates around by running around the map just to get them to sort correctly.
That's a good question to bring up when we talk to them at PAX. Although,
definitely.
I don't know how much FaceTime we would actually get with them during PAX, but it'd be something to bring up for sure.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky and they'll be kind enough to give us an interview.
I think we might be able to work that. Maybe.
Could work in a question like that into something like that.
There you go.
But the way they've designed the system, it looks like it's going to work really well.
It looks fleshed out, but obviously campaign demos, especially something like at E3, are heavily scripted.
Mm-hmm.
So the fluidity, even though it looked good in video form during the presentation, when it comes to actually executing that in game, it could be different, very different. It'll take some hands-on times.
In their little video that they put out, the making of Halo 5 or whatever it was, what was the name of that video?
The Sprint?
Was it the Sprint or was it a separate video?
There was the ViDoc and there was the Sprint.
The ViDoc.
The ViDoc? I forget what that ViDoc was. I think it was something exploring worlds, something like that. Someone in the stream chat put it out there and I'll say it.
In that video, they showed them practicing their run through. Granted, what they actually showed may have been a recorded gameplay, but it looks like they actually spent the time to run the demo and practice it. Yeah, it may have gone off flawless as far as what we've seen, but it looks like that you'll be able to, as you get familiar with the controls, get to a point where you can easily command your AI partner or AI teammates. Like I said, you're right. It looks really well fleshed out in the demo, but it might just be the fact that they had practiced it that makes it look that way, or they could have altered the actual code to make it look that way.
So judging from what they showed off during the ViDoc, it was likely showed off as an actual gameplay demo. Mm. So I feel confident that after watching the ViDoc that, yeah, what we saw at E3 was actually real-time game. But those are usually special builds.
Yeah. But like he didn't command anybody there, so, but...
Well, he commanded people a few times.
No, I meant when he picked up the plasma caster, he didn't command anybody to pick up anything near it. That's what I was thinking of. Sorry, I was thinking out loud.
Gotcha.
But it looks like it's going to be a really well fleshed out system. of course, we won't know until we get our hands on it. The other thing I like is they went in and described the revive system. And
yeah, that's actually
pretty much what we kind of were discussing between ourselves as to what it would most likely be. It looks like, you know, it gives you that second chance to continue on with the level without going back to the last checkpoint. If you're playing by yourself, if you're playing with friends, you have the system. If they don't get to you in time to revive you, they have to basically clear the enemies and get to a safe spot before you'll respawn. And then if all player controlled characters die, then you just revert to previous checkpoint. So I really like that system. And I think it's probably going to be really handy on the lasso runs to have that system in place, because you get downed and you talk, and I'm just guessing this is the way it'll work with the Iron Skull. But as long as you're just downed, it probably won't reset. It won't reset until you actually die, and then you'll revert to last checkpoint when you're playing co-op.
We'll see. It might be to where if a Spartan goes down, you might get bumped back. I could see them doing that with Iron.
But the way they're describing it, it sounds like that if you're in that downed, the game doesn't think of a downed player as a death.
Right, but they could do anything with that Iron Skull.
Well, they could be
bastards with that thing if they really wanted to.
No, if they're going to be bastards, they'll put blind in there.
Score for once on the stream says get stuck with the sticky, I'll reset the checkpoint. They did say that, like, if you take a certain amount of damage, that you just go straight from being alive to dead. So that's still in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, something like a sticky, you just get stuck by some random grunt. It's like, okay, that sucks. But I mean, that system is basically an extension of the respawn system. It's just kind of an intermediate point, because the whole respawn system, it's the same as it was in previous Halos. You wait till a human-controlled player gets to a safe spot where there's no enemies around, and then you respawn. So that hasn't changed. They've just added this revive mechanic, because now you are playing co-op essentially the whole time. So the fact that you are playing the whole time with three other teammates, it is a good mechanic to put in there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so.
Is it October yet?
We have another 3 months.
3 months?
I know, 3 months.
Of course, I said that 3 months ago about RTX. Oh, RTX is only 3 months away. Oh, wow. And now it's here.
And now it's 10 days. Our doorstep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's going to be nuts, man. So another thing that I found pretty interesting in this article too was that every Spartan that you play as is gonna have a different HUD to bring out the characteristics of what that Spartan's ability is. So the two that they brought up in the article was Lox and what was the other one?
Lindas.
Lindas? Yeah, okay.
Let's see, yeah. We have Lox. Yeah, Lox has the aggressive lines. Where Linda's has the advanced optics.
Right, and that's because Linda is a sniper.
Uh-huh. That's what she does with all the extra eyeballs.
It's really cool to see how they're really taking the whole fact that every Spartan is their own character in the game. I really like that aspect, because it really does give some depth to the whole co-op experience and really gives meaning as to why all of these Spartans are here. So I found that pretty cool. And there's also certain abilities that is going to be tied to each Spartan. So for example, Kelly, since she's the fastest member, she's going to be able to move faster than any Spartan. Tanaka on Fireteam Osiris.
Fireteam.
She's going to have increased motion tracker range. So every Spartan's going to have these little quirks, these little abilities, so to speak, that's specific to them. So I find that pretty cool as well.
Wonder what Buck's ability is going to be.
Sass talk.
It's ability. I think that's a talent.
Just having your witty remarks to go with him.
He's the comic relief.
There you go.
The
I don't know.
I like the fact that they they're customizing the HUDs for each individual character. And looking at these two pictures, I like the HUD layout. You know, it's very clean. The information you need is there, but it's not just staring you in the face, distracting you from the surroundings.
So it to me, and this is just for me, Lox looks very traditional. Of course, everything is more on the edges of the visor, so that makes sense. And we didn't, it wasn't until Halo 4 where we didn't actually see parts of the helmet on the screen, right? It was mostly you saw your screen was the entire that visor. You didn't actually see
I don't think you saw any shadow until Halo 4.
I'm not sure how I feel about that specifically. I get the artistic reason for it, but and the immersive part
from these two screenshots, from the way they look, it doesn't look like it's really going to block that much of your vision to where it'd be a handicap.
Not much, no.
As far,
but it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, that's still just kind of like it pops out. It's a distraction kind of thing. And I would be more okay if it's like when it comes to the multiplayer, if that's not there, or it's very even less than it is in these screenshots, then that'd be fine. I would be more than content with the way it is in campaign, because that's very artistic. That's meant to be a specific type of immersive experience where you are playing as that character, so it makes a lot of sense to do that. But when it comes to multiplayer, I think that should be reduced as much as possible.
From the beta, I don't remember seeing the shadow.
I don't either. Yeah.
So, you know, in multiplayer, that you may have just the standard, you know, one HUD for everybody.
And I think that's the way to go. And it feels like that's the way they are kind of going too. If you go down as well, if you're reading the article, you can actually see Chief's HUD. And that's pretty much the standard HUD that we've all been used to for Chief. So I like how that's still there.
Yeah, very simplistic.
Yep. Minimalistic, very tactical. Some of the other stuff in the article he talked about was, of course, the Artemis tracking system, something that's going to be specific for Osiris team only. And he talked a little bit about the appearance of the armor. So while blue team is more kind of weathered armor, but they still have kind of that weathered combat style, you'll have Fireteam Osiris, which has all the new flashy tech, clean, smooth armor, with shiny, all the fancy upgrades and all that stuff. So I really like how they're playing into canonically the relationship that the Fireteam have and the technology that's going into it. So they're really nailing a lot of details when it's coming to this campaign, which is a good reinforcement, I think, because it just attests to that they really want to nail this campaign, which is a good sign.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, I'm really pumped about the campaign, even more so than I was for Halo 4, which Halo 4's campaign I enjoyed. There were some things I didn't like about it, but it told a decent story. So I'm really looking to see what they've done differently in Halo 5 to improve upon what they did in the Halo 4, the way they told Halo 4 story, as to opposed to where they want to tell Halo 5 story. I think that you're going to get a lot more immersions in it. It's going to feel more like you are taking part in the mission. And granted, that a lot depends on the individual's imagination.
Yep.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be interesting to explore the alternate routes and just the areas. I don't know. It might be a couple months before I actually make my legendary run, because I'll probably just play around on normal and heroic, just kind of digging around in the levels.
Yeah, I'll start on heroic for sure, like I do for all Halo games, and do the run through there. But I'll definitely go back, and I know this is going to be a game I want to take my time on with a story, so there'll be plenty of times where I go back to play this one, I'm sure. A lot more so than Halo 4, because that story, oh my gosh. That one was hard. That one was really hard. Anyways, some of the other stuff in the article, there's a couple more things that they talk about. Going back to the whole tracking system, Josh mentioned being able to locate ammo crates, vehicles, highlighting weapons, and then being able to hack control points and turrets and force fields and that kind of stuff, which adds an interesting gameplay element into how they're going to have enemy encounters. I don't know how big of an environment style battles are going to be with Covenant coming in, but it sounds like if you're going to be hacking stuff like turrets and force fields to repurpose them, that it's going to be pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of breaking new ground with interactive elements in Halo, and that'll be interesting.
That's definitely going to be an interesting new game mechanic as far as when it comes to, you know, hacking into automated turrets and stuff like that. Kind of reminiscent of the level on Halo 4 where Cortana's taking over the local turrets. So, and that for you to be able to do that on command is that I can see all kinds of fun with that.
It'd be very interesting. They also mentioned that you could reveal certain places where you could do a Spartan charge or ground pound to gain access to alternate routes. So that's also a benefit of the tracking system. And this is only for Osiris.
And the goodies inside.
Yeah, that too.
you can't forget the goodies.
Yeah, I guess so. And then at the very end of the article, they talk about the whole decision on not going split screen. We talked a little bit about this already last week, but what Josh talks about is focusing on bringing the best they can in terms of the detail and the fidelity and the AI behavior, visual gameplay, fidelity mechanics, all that stuff. They wanted to make that the best they could, which I think is something that you brought up last week, Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of those things where there's going to be that group of people that really focus on playing with friends in the same room, and they're not going to be able to do that as easily because you have to get multiple TVs and multiple Xboxes and stuff like that. But when it comes to driving the technology, it makes sense. It's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, we understand it's all about the technology, but that's not always what video games is about.
I just got to thinking about this today, and granted, this will not apply to everybody. With the release of Windows 10 and the fact that it is a free upgrade, granted, not everybody's going to upgrade to Windows 10, but it does give you the option. You do still have to buy another Xbox, but past your initial setup, you actually don't have to have anything connected to your Xbox to play it from a laptop or a desktop.
But you still have to have a laptop or a desktop to do that.
Well, you know, how many, granted. Well,
and take that back, caveat that, you have to have a Windows laptop or computer. Because I know plenty of people that have an Xbox, but everything else is iOS or Mac. So granted, so they can't play it on their computer.
This is an option. You know, this is an option. For those of you, you know, for those people that don't want to go out and buy a dedicated TV just so they can play a second Xbox, they can, you know, get the Xbox set up, move it into their server closet or their, you know, put it under their desk, plug it in and set it up to and play it through the game streaming, which if you have a relatively newer network, it works really well. I've played it. I've personally used it with the Master Chief Collection and some other games, and I was streaming it to my laptop, which runs Windows 8. Granted, it is a relatively new laptop, and it's in the upper tier of laptops, but it worked very well. I don't know how far down you can, what quality level there is in that with, you know, smaller processors and lower quality graphics cards and stuff like that. I don't know how far that'll step down before it actually starts to affect the experience, but it is an option to where, you know, people can do still have their local co-op and not have to set up multiple TVs and multiple Xboxes. Just one of those random thoughts. And I know it's not going to be for everybody.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that Josh in the article did acknowledge the people that play split screen.
Yes.
And he made knowing where those people are coming from and knowing that, you know, what this does to their game playing style and understanding it. So I think that this removal of local co-op play was a tough decision for them. You know, it's not something they just said, oh, we'll just throw this out. You know, they thought long and hard before they decided to drop the split screen.
Right. And he even says in there, and I'll pull this out, to move Halo's gameplay forward and to deliver a true next-gen experience, tough choices had to be made. Our decision was driven by a desire for scale, fidelity, and focus to ensure that we would deliver the best quality experience possible. And then he goes on to say a little bit later, where was it? Game development is a balancing act of resources, time, and technology. And in this case, we made the tough decision to sacrifice something that has been near and dear to all of us. So that just kind of goes to say that, yeah, we recognize this is something that everyone has been kind of brought up on. Because if you think about it, one of the things that I think made Halo such, to use the term, such a gateway game, is because you could bring your friends over and say, hey, come play this game with me. And that's how most of us probably got onto Halo in the first place, was playing with your buddies on the couch. That's how I
started playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's how I got started. My first screen name was Bait, so.
That's funny.
It's
cruel, but, you know, funny.
That's how I got entered. I'm the one that made it.
Oh, okay.
That's how I started, is playing on, going over to a friend's house and playing. So it's something that'll be missed by a lot of people. And I really hope that in future titles, they find a way to bring it back in, but it's kind of one of those things that it's probably not going to come back. I would hope it does, but
maybe as the technology, or as the games kind of get used to the technology, we might see it. But
like I said, all these game developers, they're still learning how to optimize the Xbox. And it's the same thing they went through on the 360. It takes time to learn to develop the code to get the most out of console game, or out of the Xbox, out of the console. And that's one thing that's one advantage that consoles have over PC gaming, because each game developer has a set of specs, and they can tweak and tune and maximize their game to run on those specs. Where on a PC game, they have to design for a broad spectrum of specifications. I mean, yes, they have minimum specs for the game that you have to, but, or that, you know, you have to play the game, but they also have to give the versatility and the adjustability in the game to handle much higher grade software or hardware than the game is designed to run on, so that the people that do spend, the people that do have $3,000 in their gaming rig can get the most out of that game with their rig.
Right.
So that is one bonus to having a console game. The downside to that very same point is it takes time for the developers to really get up to speed on what they can do with the hardware, because they literally they have to write new code. They have to develop the new engines. They have to figure out the ways to do all this stuff. And it takes time. You know, up until Xbox One's launch, they were still learning new tricks with the 360. So
true.
What's going to be really interesting is in two to three years, what they're going to be doing with Halo 6, what it's going to look like and what features it's going to have.
And time will tell with that. Another 3 more years.
Mm-hmm.
That pretty much wraps up the article that Josh wrote. So that's all we have to talk about really for tonight. There's a couple of submissions that have been sitting in our mailbags. We're going to go ahead and get to those real quick. If anyone has anything that you would like us to talk about, I know there's been quite a bit of chat of the stuff that we've been talking about on the show already, but if there's anything that anyone in the Twitch chat wants us to bring up, then feel free to go ahead and type it in there while we go at these submissions that we have. So the first one comes from the Great Whoopdini, and I think these are either back from like the May or June time frame, somewhere around there. He says, relating to the Spartans who met their clones and committed suicide, so this was back when we were doing our Hunt of Truth stuff, that was actually a reference to what happened in the Halo Legends short Homecoming. You can refresh your memory on this YouTube video if you got a few minutes to spare. So they basically just linked to a YouTube rip of the Homecoming short, which is off the Halo Legends DVD. The line mentioning those Spartans is near the end of the short. I admit, I was pretty hyped to see that 343 hasn't forgotten Legends and is, no less, incorporating it into the main plot of the series. So an interesting thing, and I don't think I actually watched Homecoming, because when I went to watch the video, it was something I didn't really remember. So that was probably one of the two that I didn't actually watch from Halo Legends. But anyways, going through it and seeing that the two Spartans that were mentioned in Hunt the Truth, they killed themselves when they saw their clones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were four Spartans that escaped, and they all went home. One of them that they were actually following, she found, she went back to her house and she found the clone, which she was confined to a wheelchair, and she approached her with her gun drawn, meaning to kill her. And her clone basically hands her this little teddy bear on like a keychain. And it's like, okay, you need this more than I do. And she came to terms with it. The other two, and for the life of me, I can't remember their names. One of them actually went into the house, found his clone, which he was bedridden. He was pretty much on death's door already. And he died while the original was in the room. And later on, they found him, and this is probably the one they were talking about in the Hunt the Truth series, where the police were called, and then they later on found this person dead in a field from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and it was the same guy. The other one, I can't remember the details, but I believe he basically just saw his clone and didn't actually approach him, just went off somewhere and shot himself.
Gotcha.
The one girl and the other male Spartan were both recaptured. Well, they gave up after meeting their clones and went back to the Spartan program.
And that was one of them for the Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sending that in, Great Whoopdini. Yeah, it's cool to see that a lot of the Hunt the Truth stuff did bring in a lot of the original Halo lore back into the fold. So the whole thing, mm-hmm. And we mentioned this when we were talking about the Hunt of Truth stuff before, the fact that there was so many references back to the Fall of Reach novel was just so cool to see that they're really digging back into Halo's history. And while Halo 4 had the issue of you had to read the books in order to really understand what was going on in the campaign, the whole thing with the Hunt of Truth stuff is it's almost like a gateway into that extra lore, because take a look at Beowulf's friend, which we still need to get on the show. He definitely never read the books, and because of Hunt the Truth, now he's interested in the books.
I think it's enough of a tease to get you interested into the series. Not everybody's into video games, and I think with the Hunt the Truth series, it's enough to get your appetite whetted enough to where you want to go and read the books and find out more about this universe. And never know, you might bring some people into the into the game as well. For me, the original game was enough to get me interested into the story that I started reading the books and the comics and digging around on websites to learn the extra stuff and learn about the universe. And it's always interesting to see the new stuff that you find. So I think Hunt the Truth was a very good series, and can't wait to see what they got coming up.
Season 2, September. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And Noah said he would come on the show probably after release of the game to talk about Hunt the Truth 2. So that would be even
cool.
That would be even more cool, which will be awesome.
Yay.
Yes. I do remember that 343 mission, they're going to do something at the beginning of Halo 5 that is kind of an essential story recap. So I'm hoping they're putting a lot of time and effort into that so people don't have to go and read through all the details of the books. Now, I know they try to do it with Halo 4 to where it's you get more of an enriched experience with the campaign if you've read the lore before, but with how complex and how diverse the lore is now, with how big the universe is, I think you have to at least cater to a lot of those people that, you know, haven't read the books, that don't know all the story from Escalation, from the novels, from everything else that's going on, so that they can understand and have a certain appreciation for what's going to go on in the campaign. And then hopefully by that measure, you'll get some people to get in on the books. But there are some people that just play the game specifically for the games, and they just go through the campaign of the game, and that's the story that they get. So you have to be able to cater to that. And it sounds like they're working on stuff like for that, but they need to really nail that before people start going into Halo 5.
Well, it's like between Halo C and Halo 2, I hadn't actually gotten into reading the books yet. And, you know, I go from legendary ending of Halo CE, where we see Johnson on the Halo ring. And then you get to the start of Halo 2, and magically Johnson's back on the space station. It's like, how did he get there? And I didn't know how he got there until I read the book First Strike, because that describes how he got back. So, you know, there are things in lore that make the game, that do enrich the games, and it's things like that. But the games should be able to stand on their own. And that is something they did fail at with Halo 4. With the beginning of Halo 4, yes, it picks up where Halo 3 left off, but you get thrust into some information really quickly that they don't explain. You magically, Cortana has this information that it's like, okay, where did this come from? Because she's been trapped on the Forward Unto Dawn for the last 4 years.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you have all this stuff about, you know, you have all this stuff about the Didact that magically she knows already without interfacing with anything, you know, just magically out of thin air, she knows all this stuff. They need to do a better job than that in Halo 5. And the way they've structured like Hunt the Truth and some of the media between Halo 4 and Halo 5, I think the opening cutscene on Halo 5, I hope, does a good job of tying the universe together between Halo 4 and Halo 5. Now, it doesn't need to be a 20-minute movie, but a good 10-minute cutscene that is totally skippable that you can watch through and kind of gives you just a rundown of what's happened to catch you up to why, or catch you up to where you're starting in the game. And that's just something I really hope they do well, a lot better than they did in Halo 4.
Wasn't there something like that in Mass Effect?
I don't know. I didn't play Mass Effect.
I'm pretty sure there... Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure in Mass Effect, and Laird can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but for Mass Effect 3 and maybe 2 as well, if you had previous saves that the games would actually read in the story, and there'd be a short cinematic sequence where it basically details what happens in the last game. And if you don't have a save, then it would do what is the expected path for people to choose in the game. And it basically goes through the story of what happened in the previous game in about 5 to 7 minutes. So they need to have something like that for Halo that covers all the lore stuff. And of course, included in that would be what happened in the previous games, most likely. But since this is more focused on, I think, what's being pulled out of the lore and not necessarily the games, because everyone's been playing the games, but you've seen a change in direction from what the games focused on, which was the Halos and specifically the Covenant. And now we've had this transition over into pretty much a new part of the universe that isn't directly related to the events of Halo 1 through 3. So having something like that, like they have in Mass Effect, is pretty crucial, I think, for Halo 5 Guardians.
Yeah, because it would have been really crucial for Halo 4 because you have such a long span of time between the game Halo 4 and Halo 5, or Halo 3 and Halo 4, where Halo 1's 1, 2, and 3, they're pretty rapid succession games. So there's not a lot to explain between the two other than the previous game.
Right.
You know, with that big jump, and that's where Halo 4 kind of failed for me as far as story-wise, is, yes, I'd read the books, so I knew what was going on, but I started playing the game, and I looked at it like, there's going to be people that are confused as hell, because they don't, you know, you, to get Halo 4, you really did need to read the books. And I just want to make, I really hope that they don't pull that again with the Halo 5 stuff. I want to be able to start the game up. It gives me a brief rundown of what's happened to catch me up to speed to that game.
Yeah.
And, you know, personally, I don't need it, but I want it there for the people that haven't played all the games, or they played Halo 4 campaign and they were so unhappy with it that they just quit playing Halo.
So I don't think you would need to necessarily do it for the campaigns, because the campaigns are on a totally different track than what Halo 5 is going to be on. I think you just need that to cover the lore from the books. You'll need to cover the games, because, I mean, if people want to go play the games, heck, they're going to say, hey, go buy the Master Chief Collection. Do that.
Yeah, but there's still story. You know, they don't need to cover everything that's in the extended fiction.
No, but it needs to be stuff that's going to be essential to having a basic understanding of what's going on in this campaign.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. We're kind of saying the same thing. And Cynical Plum in the stream is saying the same thing, where Halo 5 is going to rely heavily on supplemental material. And I just hope that whatever they're putting out for the little prelude to the game, that it's enough supplementary material to at least get people to understand on a basic level what's going on, but also to be a, hey, if you like what you see, check out some of these books kind of thing.
Mm.
And they have that whole infographic as well. And score for one, to answer your comment in here, I'm not saying that they should go through the saves from the last games, because the thing with Mass Effect is you're actually driving the story based on your responses. With Halo, you're playing through the same thing every time. There's no decision that you're making that influences the story of the game. So there's really no point to like read in old saves for Halo. So I wasn't trying to say that, that Halo needed to go back and pull from saves. I mean, one, there wouldn't be any point, because everyone saves. All the save is saying, okay, you've completed this mission.
Yeah, where in Mass Effect, the save also saved your choices as to how you went through the campaign. And that's that's the big difference between the Mass Effect games and Halo. Halo, up until now, you pretty much went from A to B.
Yeah.
You know, everybody did the same thing in campaign, so there's no point. But where Mass Effect differs is that how you respond to the different statements determined how the game went for you.
Right.
It affected how you played the game. You could be the good guy, you could be the bad guy, or you could be the kind of not good or bad guy. It just...
True.
And yeah, that's one thing. I did play the Mass Effect 3 demo, and that part of it I enjoyed. It's just I couldn't get into the actual gameplay mechanics of it, and that's why I never really picked up the Mass Effect series.
Okay.
But I saw that in the story, and that really intrigued me, but it wasn't enough for me to actually go out and buy the game.
Gotcha. Okay. We're going to go ahead and...
Note for future games. No, not for Halo.
So, let's see. The next submission that we have is from Aaron. That's all he put down. And this was definitely from a while ago as well. So sorry for the lateness of this, but he says, hey guys, this last couple of weeks, you've been spitballing possible ideas for the plot of the Spielberg show. And I wanted to put my own idea forward, although I'm not sure you'll have time to even discuss it before E3. So obviously this was submitted. This was actually submitted June before E3 started, like the week before. So we'll see what we can do to answer it. I think the plot of the show is going to relate to the events of Primordium and Hunters in the Dark. At the end of Primordium, it's revealed that Chaka, the main character of the book, is 343 Guilty Spark, and that he survived the end of Halo 3. He was found on the Ark by a joint Human Covenant expedition that was dispatched to investigate a signal being picked up from the installation. During the current day sections of Primordium, we learned that monitors' remains were recovered by a recon team and taken on board for analysis and debrief by an Oni team. There are no names used in these transcripts. As the story progresses, we learn that 343 breaches the firewalls on the ships and hijacks it. The last sections finish with 343 having an exchange with the crew. He says, "One of you almost certainly carries Venevera and Riser's old spirits within. Only a life shaper can find them and coax my old friends back to life. And after 100,000 years of exploration and study, I know where to find her. Venevera and Riser are ancient humans and were friends of Chakas during the events of Primordium. It would seem 343 believes the crew contains the Gaosh that and wants to unlock them by finding the Life Shaper. We know the librarian died on Earth when the Halos fired, but before she left the Ark, she passed the title of Life Shaper to another Forerunner. And from the Silentium epilogue, Rebirth, we know that after reseeding the galaxy, the Isodidact and the last of the Forerunners on the Ark left to make a new home in order to allow humanity to develop free from Forerunner interference. So it's possible 343 has discovered their location, or more likely clues to lead them there." I did not even consider that after reading Primordium that Oni was debriefing 343 Guilty Spark. That was taking place after the events of Halo 3.
That's one of the advantages of the audiobooks.
That's never dawned on me. Wow.
Through that whole... Yeah.
Okay, I just learned something new that I never put two and two together for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, through that whole book, if you listen to the audiobook, it's... You get to... It really stands out that you have Chakas 343 telling a story to... government agents.
Oh, I knew that.
And as you go through the story, you figure out, okay, these aren't just your typical, you know, typical generals and stuff like that. These are Oni agents.
Oh, I knew that. I knew that from beginning reading the book. I just never put two and two together that, hey, they're debriefing Guilty Spark after the events of Halo. I never put that together until he said something.
Yeah, at the very end of the book, because Tim Dodabo read the book for the audiobook.
That's good. That's awesome.
As he gets to the end, his voice starts to change, and he slides into 343 Guilty Spark. And then by the very end of the book, where they're talking about how he takes the ship captive, he starts to talk about this stuff. You like Aaron was saying, and that is just something that reading the book is one thing, but to hear, especially Tim Dodabo, read this to you and put his voice to it,
yeah,
makes it so much more real.
I will say that's one good advantage of an audiobook. I can't mm-hmm. do audiobooks. It just doesn't work for me.
Not everybody can. Like I said, it's... For me, it's probably, a convenience.
I'd probably listen for vanity's sake, but that's probably it. So I'm going to finish the submission here. The preview of Hunters in the Dark would seem to indicate it's going to be an in-depth account of the Ark mission and what happened to the teams. I think that the book is going to build up the characters and crew of the UNSC Rubicon in preparation for the TV show. I believe the show will take place after the hijack by 343 and will follow him and the crew as he searches out the last of the Forerunners and the Life Shaper. This will also be the catalyst that eventually brings the Isodact into the games. The search would allow for the show to take place in the Halo universe without straying too far into the current events of the species we already know. The ship would essentially be isolated on its own quest, so there would be minimal possibility of causing continuity errors within the lore. As for the tone of the show, I think it could be a mix of Battlestar Galactica and Stargate Universe. I hope this all makes sense and hopefully makes for some good show discussion.
That would be an interesting mix.
I need to watch Battlestar Galactica. I've watched Stargate Universe, but I haven't watched Battlestar Galactica yet. And I don't know, for the TV show being that kind of production, I would assume that's going to focus a lot more on the current events of Halo, at least with it seems like the direction they want to take with it. Granted, we still don't really know much anything about it, so that's a complete guess on my part.
Well, that's definitely something we haven't thought about.
True.
You know, in our own little discussions. I mean,
we've never really brought it up because the TV show has been something that's been very quiet as of late.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but, you know, that's Receptor, you have competition.
He's not in here anymore.
Oh, well, maybe he'll listen to it later.
Hopefully.
That is just something that it really intrigues me. It would be great to see, to get more in depth into that part of the story.
Uh-huh.
But I have to believe that the series is going to deal with more current events.
I would assume that so.
More directly relate to the current time in the Halo universe.
Right. I kind of feel the same way. Granted, I wouldn't mind seeing the Halo TV show take that kind of story. I think it would be cool to explore. I'm just thinking from a practical standpoint and what they're going to be focusing on, especially with Halo 5 coming out, that's probably what they're going to focus on.
I would just really like to get it. Date as to when it releases.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Anyways, so we have one other thing to play off. We actually have a voicemail that we haven't played in forever. This one dates back to April, so it's going to be a little outdated, but we'll go ahead and play it for you guys right now.
Hi, this is Joshua. I was calling in to after this week's show in regards to you guys talking about Sarah Palmer. One of you guys were saying that you weren't a real big fan of her, and I just wanted to ask that, have you read the comics that she's in? I forget the name of it off the top of my head right now. But her backstory, and then what more of her backstory that's in Halo Blood. It's just not about Buck. You get a little bit more of Sarah Palmer's backstory that I think that they're bringing a lot out of her for her character, and that I think that maybe you should reconsider your opinion that she's not such a bad character after all. A big Halo fan, gamertag is Darth Cadius 2485 on Xbox One. Bye.
So we actually talked a little bit about this last week, believe it or not. The whole Sarah Palmer issue when we were doing our New Blood discussion. But it is something that I think for a lot of people, Palmer has always been kind of, I mean, she got a bad introduction in Halo 4, to be perfectly honest. And a lot of people give her flack for that. But I don't think it's really anything against Palmer specifically. And I know that we've talked on here, it could just be a character thing that a lot of people just don't like. People with that character set, but I know for me, I really like Palmer as a character in Halo.
In Halo 4, as I said on the last time we talked about this, in Halo 4, I liked her character. Yeah, her character was pretty rough, and they've done a good job of kind of polishing that character through the comics and New Blood and some of the other stuff that they've done. And you know, she's really established in the universe now, and I think that they've done a good job with her character. And I think that more people will have come to actually like her as a character as to the people that when they were first introduced to her, a lot of people didn't like her.
The comic that he was talking about that he forgot was Initiation. And there's quite a bit of her in Escalation too.
Mm-hmm.
And he did mention the whole part of New Blood where Palmer was in that as well. And it kind of sucks because I think that 343 expanded on her character in Spartan Assault. So they did a little bit of that in there. And now they're just kind of piecemealing her into stories wherever they can. Which,
yeah,
it keeps her relevant, but it's not really building her character anymore. And I don't know if that's something that 343 is responding to the negativity that people have with her, or if there's really not any more character development, which means that is she really that shallow of a character where we've really gone through that much of her story, or is it something that, and this is probably more likely the case, is they're just focusing on other things now and they want to keep her relevant, which is why they're just dropping her piecemeal wise into all these other things.
I think there's definitely a lot more to her character. I think she just doesn't fit in with the current, you know, the current way they want to go with the games. As far as the game side, I'm sure she will remain relevant in the extended lore. I do hope that they bring her back into the games in some way, not necessarily as a playable character, but as a character in the game.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to, you know, even in Halo 5, she may actually make an appearance in Halo 5 because we have Tom Lasky, which usually means the Infinity's not far behind, and she's, you know, the head of the Spartan Fours on Infinity. So, you know, I'm sure we're going to see more of her. It's just as a main character, it's probably going to be a little while before she's brought back in as a main character.
Right. Or a secondary character. She's never really been a primary character. She had a significant role in Spartan Ops, but she's never been a primary character from a playability standpoint. I think
as far as story.
Yeah, Spartan Ops, she was the focus.
Yeah, she was the focus. And even in the Halo 4 campaign, I wouldn't put her in the primary position, but she was definitely very visible in the Halo 4 campaign as well.
I'd say maybe tertiary at that. I wouldn't say secondary for her. I mean, you saw her twice and then the radio check-in one other time, and that was about it. But anyways, I don't think she's a bad character. I think she's great to have in the Halo universe, and I hope we get to see more of her. For those that want to call in, our voicemail number is 240-200-HALO. That's 240-200-4256, and you can leave a Halo-related message similar to the one you just heard. Or you can also send us an email to submissions@podtacular.com or use the big green submit button on our homepage, and you can send us in that way. And we'll read those off on the show every 1 or 2 months, as it seems to be going right now, or every 4 months.
Maybe we'll try to do that a little bit more often.
So it helps if people actually send in submissions, which is one of the reasons why I don't do it as often.
I know.
I try to at least get some kind of bucket to work with that's not just one every time. So send in submissions, people. If you have something to discuss, like these fine folks have submitted in, or if it's some cool story or something that you've realized that I should have realized over 2 years ago, then send it in to us. We'd be more than happy to talk about it.
Yeah, tell us about your triple 360 no-scope.
There you go. Giles just put one in the chat. He says, any support or discussion about the don't pre-order idea? We actually touched on this a little bit last week, or the week before. I can't remember specifically when we were talking about I think it was last week, because we were talking about the disc with the limited collector's edition thing. And I've made this statement on Twitter, and I'll say it here. I'm personally for the whole don't pre-order thing, because one of the things that 343 hasn't been able to prove quite yet, and that was loud, with Halo, is that they haven't been able to quite put out a quote-unquote quality game, so to speak. One that a lot of people have a lot of foundational trust. So there's a lot of trust issues with 343. In holding the franchise, some rightly placed, some I think that's probably a little immature, but that's kind of on a case-by-case basis. I think the whole thing of waiting to see what the product is before you go buy it is your responsibility as a consumer. I think that's speaking with your wallet, and honestly, that's the way you speak to the companies. It's if you don't believe in the product until it comes out, until you see the reviews, until you have other people come to you and say, this is, I mean, you do that with stuff you buy. So your phone, like your cell phone, if you're in the Android market, you go do your research. It's like, okay, which is the best phone for me for what I'm going to get? You look at reviews, you look at what other people have said, you look at your friends, your family to see what they have and what they recommend. And then you make the decision on what you want to buy. I mean, some people, like Apple diehards, will pre-order the next iPhone whenever it gets announced at whatever Mac conference is up next. And those people are pretty much in there for the brand. And to be honest, I'm one of those people when it comes to Halo. I pre-ordered the collector's edition for Halo 5 when it was announced. I pre-ordered it that hour. I am one of those people that are contributing to the problem. But I do that because it is a brand that, even though 343 has made some not great decisions about Halo, I am still willing to support. And I want the exclusive stuff that is coming with the collector's edition. But if you're one of those people that you're just in it for the game and you want to wait until you see what Halo 5 is going to end up being, I'm in full support of that. I think that's a great idea. That's being a diligent consumer. That's being a responsible consumer. And you're speaking with your wallet, because at the end of the day, if 343 doesn't make the sales numbers for a Halo game, that's the way that they learn. Is like, okay, people didn't like this game. They didn't come out and buy this game. We did something wrong. Granted, I don't think that's going to be the case for Halo 5, but in the event that it would be, say that Halo 4 was the next Halo 5 coming out, then yeah, I think it would be a lot more of an impact of like, okay, company took a hit, didn't make nearly the amount of sales that they were planning to get. People really didn't like what they saw. And that's really, granted, they do listen to community feedback. They show that they listen to community feedback, but when it comes to brass tacks and money that they make, money is the real influential piece here. So I'm all for the idea.
Me too. And even, you know, I'm with Dust. The moment they announced the limited collector's edition, I pre-ordered it. Now, the reason I did is because I want the Halo stuff.
That good, glorious Halo stuff.
In this day, yeah. In this day and time, if you're just going to buy the basic game, there really is no point to pre-order it.
Unless you want to play it
in the earlier days.
Comes out.
Honestly, even that, probably, but I even doubt that. You could probably walk into a game store, a GameStop, or you know, some whatever game store is open at midnight, and of course you'll be at the end of the line. You can probably walk up there and buy a copy. The days of having to pre-order a game to ensure you get a copy of it on the first run have long since been over. Back in Halo 2 days, the first run was limited. They had a much smaller run than they do nowadays when they make that first print of games. Because when they're making that first print of games, they're looking for game day launch, but they're also looking to the Christmas sales too. So they're just pumping out copy after copy after copy. And then you add in the digital download nowadays with these new consoles. You can buy it right off the Xbox store for the same price that you can get it out of any of the stores. Granted, you don't get a disc.
Right.
And you can't trade it in. But midnight rolls around, you can hit buy now, go to bed. When you wake up, game's installed, ready to play.
Yep. There you go.
If you are going to buy just the basic version of the game, no matter what it is, and for any reason, I don't see a point in pre-ordering it. And with 343, the basic game, I wouldn't recommend anybody does pre-order. The limited and the collector's limited are a more limited production. Like the collector's limited has been selling out at different places for the past, month or two. I think you can still get it from the online sources like Amazon or GameStop Online or Best Buy Online. But as far as physical locations, I think they're all sold out. So in that case, yeah, a pre-order, if it's something you really want, a pre-order is necessary if you want to ensure that you get it. But for the basic game, I don't see any point to pre-ordering it unless you want to pick it up at midnight or you want to be guaranteed a copy at midnight on launch day.
Pretty much.
And this applies to any game, not just Halo, because yes, we know as a Halo community that 343 has made some very big mistakes when it comes to Halo, but they're not the only ones out there making mistakes. And this problem is becoming industry-wide. They have these guaranteed sales on day one, and they are losing some accountability in what they produce.
Mm-hmm.
And we, as a gaming community across all games, need to tell these producers that they need to give us a high quality game that works out of the box.
Yep.
So, end of rant.
There you go. So yes, Giles, we are pretty much in support of the don't pre-order idea if that is something that you choose to pursue. I think that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We have a giveaway to do. We got one of the San Diego Comic-Con pins. So for everyone that is listening to us in the Twitch stream, you can possibly win one of these. We're giving out another one. We may do another one on Thursday this week. We may do another one on the podcast right before our 500th as well. So we're going to go ahead and give one of those away. Just one of the perks if you drop by our stream during our podcast. So I'm going to tell everyone in here to go ahead and stand by. We're going to do the whole rolling random number thing again. I have all the names copied out for those that are in the stream right now. So if you're in the stream listening to us right now, you have a chance to win, except for those that have won previously. You, of course, cannot win again. Sorry. But that's only two people in here that don't qualify. So going to roll. Let's see. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people in here that are eligible. So I'm going to go ahead and roll the random number generator. First name to hit it twice will get said pin. So let me go to random.org and do 1 to 8. First number is 2, 1, 3, 2. That would be Darkness Strike. So congratulations. You just won yourself a San Diego Comic-Con pin. Although you need to claim it. So please type something in the chat within the next 5 minutes and you'll secure it. If not, we'll be running it again and giving it to someone else. But in the meantime, thanks everyone for tuning into our podcast. We will be back on Thursday. We're kind of doubling up podcast shows until we hit our anniversary show, just so we can have number 500 be our anniversary panel. Now, it's a little selfish, but hey, it works. So we're going to be...
Well, here, as of lately, we've had enough content to cover two shows.
I think so. And tonight went quite long, unlike what I expected. So I'm very happy with how that turned out. For what we're going to be doing in RTX, again, we have our panel on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. I haven't looked at the schedule to where our room is. Actually, I should be able to pull up an email. We are at the Austin Convention Center, room 12 at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday. And that is our 10-year anniversary podcast panel. And then we have our party, which is going to be at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, same day. So after the convention closes at 6, you can head on over, you have to wait a little bit, but when 7:30 rolls around, you can head on over to Moonshine Bar and Grill, and that's about a 3-minute walk from the convention center. If you're on the southeast corner, it's kind of catty corner a little bit into that neighborhood. So it's really, if you're close to the convention center, it's within walking distance from the convention center to where our party is going to be. And that's on Saturday. So if you're in Austin, then I hope that you can check it out. We'd really like to have you guys there. I want to give a huge shout out to a few other Halo communities that have kind of helped get us to this spot. A big shout out, of course, goes to Griffball Hub, who helped us get our Indiegogo campaign up and running, helping us figure out the perks and the prizes to give away, helping us with trying to figure out where to buy swag. So the shirts and the buttons and the wristbands and the lanyards that we have going into the prize packs that we have for all the people that donated, and then for some of the stuff that we'll be giving away at RTX and other conventions, they helped us figure out where to get all that stuff and help make it cheap. Also, shout out to Drunken Halo, Justin, who is the host of that show, is going, or co-host rather, he's going to be the DJ. He's going to be bringing some audio equipment for our RTX anniversary reunion party that night. So huge shout outs to him. And then, of course, all the other people out there who contributed to the Indiegogo campaign, and for everyone that helped spread the word, that's helped been a part of us in the past. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. So huge shout outs to all you guys. And for anyone that's in Austin, we hope to see you there. Since Darkness Strike hasn't responded in the chat, it's time for a reroll. So for those of you still in here, you get a second chance at getting this pin. And I just checked the viewer list again, and Darkness Strikes is indeed gone. So if you're listening to this after the fact, sorry, dude, you kind of missed out. We have this time 8 people again taking Darkness out. So here we go again. Rolling the random number generator. We got first one is a 2, lucky number 2, maybe. 8, 6, 4, hitting those even numbers. 6. So that is Sci-Fi Fan 117. Are you in the chat? If so, please respond. And he just said something, so I'm pretty sure he's going to respond back. But yeah, say acknowledged in the chat, and that way we know that you're going to claim this thing. And it, again, it's a San Diego Comic-Con Halo 5 Guardians exclusive pin. I put a tweet out on that on the Podtacular Twitter account a little while ago. No, Laird Pins does not win. He already won one of these things. Yay, we got the acknowledgement. Sci-Fi Yay. Fan, congratulations.
Yay!
So you just need to send us a DM on Twitter, on Twitch, not Twitter. Go ahead and send a message to either, well, just do it to the Podtacular account. That's going to be the easiest. So send a DM with your address, with your mailing address, and we will go ahead and get one of these pins sent your way. If you want to do it via email, then you can send an email to me at dustorm@podtacular.com. That's dustorm at podtacular.com. If you want to send it that way instead of over Twitch. So congratulations, dude. We will be back again on Thursday. I don't know if we're going to get this to work this early, but we have been trying to get Evil Geniuses on the show for a while. And for those who don't know, they won the Season 2 Grand Finals for the Halo Championship Series, which was the last time that the Master Chief Collection or Halo 2 Anniversary is going to be played for HCS. That means that the next time we see HCS roll around, it's going to be on Halo 5 Guardians. Fun stuff. Looking forward to it. Although, I thought that there would have been enough time for a Season 3, so I'm a little sad that they are just kind of putting a hiatus for the next 3 months on competitive Halo.
Well, I think it's a good thing. For one, it will give...
It gives them time to figure things out for Halo 5.
It gives the teams time to get Halo 5 figured out. But with the issues they were having, I think it's probably best not to try to push in a Season 3. They were having some very, very troubling times in this last tourney with disconnects and drops. So
yeah,
hopefully Halo 5 fixes all that. So fingers crossed. Right? I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Good. I will say the finals were fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. I watched a little bit of it. I couldn't watch all of it. Because I was doing work around the house, but I did watch some of it.
I was a little worried when CLG came up from the loser's bracket and took the first series of 5. I was a little on edge that Evil Geniuses was going to fall, but then it was obvious that CLG just shook the beehive, because when it came back to the series, mm-hmm. Evil Geniuses just took the first 3 games. It's like, nope, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you're watching them play, you see why they won. They are very coordinated. They understand the game mechanics. They're really, really good at the game. And it will be interesting to hear their thoughts on the tournament and, you know, maybe a little detail about, you know, their teamwork and stuff like that. It's just, I can't wait to hear from them. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it. And I've been talking with Taui for, gosh, since, I know at least since after Season 1 Finals. I think it's been since the Season 1 Finals back at PAX East. Mm-hmm. That I've been trying to get him on the show. And it's always been just an issue of trying to get the other players in on it. And then other things coming up. So eventually, we'll get everything down to actually having them on the show. So if we get that on Thursday, great. If not, Thursday might be a short show. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It is time for us to wrap up and say goodnight for the night. For everyone in the Twitch stream, thank you for coming out. And again, congratulations to Sci-Fi Fan 117 for winning the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive Halo 5 Guardians pin. Don it well, my friend. We will be back on Thursday, like I said before, for our regularly scheduled podcast. Make sure you check us out on Fridays as well when Godzilla T hosts the Fraggin' Fridays game night where we play on the Master Chief Collection. And you can also check out our stream on Mondays where Haas streams Man Up Mondays with the folks over at Rectified. They do some team doubles on the Master Chief Collection and Halo 2 Anniversary as well. So you can check that out on Monday. So we have a kind of a regular stream schedule for you guys. So gives you guys plenty of opportunities to drop on by and say hi. Make sure you check out our website, podtacular.com. And while you're there, head on over to our forums. We have a few threads up there on a few different topics. It's usually pretty quiet, but every once in a while, there's a few threads that get going with the discussions for a little bit. So if you ever wanted to just hit on up over there and see what's going on, feel free to go over and register. Make sure you check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, which you, Mr. GT, have a new video coming up here pretty soon. And we will actually, by the time you're hearing this posted, we will have our in real life breakout video collab with Unishek. We actually had two GoPros up on the corners of the GoPro, or not the GoPro, the breakout arena at San Diego Comic-Con. So we have that video here coming up. I'm actually, as we're recording this, I'm going to be posting it tonight. So that's fun and exciting. Yeah, so we got a couple of videos coming up for this week. And then we also have the podcast network to give a shout out to. That is our sister podcast network that has podcasts like Guardian Radio, Critcast, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. So if you're looking for some other gaming podcasts to check out, then I highly recommend checking out that podcast network. That will do it for us tonight. Until Thursday, we'll see you guys back here on the stream for those of you that are going to be coming by on Twitch. And if not, we'll see you guys on your mobile device on the downloads. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to us. And until next time, keep on fragging RTX.